I'm excited. I am.
Nobody else will. Big Kev, live from the Ouija board.
It might have been that half a bottle of red wine I just drank, but I am damn excited. No,
I'm on the Brooklyn Nets. I've got an excellent leg of Tokyo Dry.
So let's bring me down.
Unexpectedly mediocre.
Well, okay.
The Balls Podcast After Dark. Unexpectedly mediocre.
Well, no, or I don't know whether unexpectedly is exact, but let's
reliably mediocre.
If we're going to go with reliably mediocre, let's start with the Pixies.
Oh, dark. So, before I drop the Pixies into the list for next week.
Yeah.
What were your feels about the Pixies? What was your mind view of the Pixies? What did you know of the Pixies?
Oh, nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Did you know that they were a thing?
Yeah.
Like, of Frank Black and that sort of, it's like Black Francis and that?
Yeah, I knew that they were a widely regarded good band. Yes.
They were like an older generation X band.
Yeah, and
the sort of band Francis Leach would like.
Yes, absolutely. With
the sort of band Richard Kingsmill would like.
So, what's their main song? Here Comes Your Man.
I would say yes, but I think one of the identifying qualities of them is that they don't have any big singles because that would be too mainstream, man. They were grunge before grunge was grunge.
Yeah,
they are. When you listen to their sound, you can very much see them on the evolutionary pathway from, say, Neil Young, who I think is identified as being the godfather of grunge because of the fact, just because he complained about things with distorted guitar. And then you've got the sound of the Pixies, and then you've got your Nirvanas. And you can sort of see how the sound evolved.
I've got another.
And the whining evolved.
I've got another theory why they don't have any singles, because they're fucking not that good. I have a. Their music.
Do you remember our Desert Island Disc special where we got in trouble because we insulted everybody who put in a Desert Island Disc special?
Okay, well, look, their old stuff.
Doolittle, their 1989 album, was on probably a third to a half of the Desert Island Disc list that we processed.
Their old
so
stuff.
Hi to anybody still listening to us. No, I listened to Doolittle. It's not as good as the album that came before it, which is Surfer Rosa. But what I will say is that the album that they released this year, which is their first album after a long hiatus, the new album is called, blanks on the title of the new album.
Head Carrier.
Head Carrier, because it's the first single. Head Carrier! Is of a consistent sound as the albums that came before it, including Surfer Rosa and Doolittle.
Really? That's disappointing. This is a lot like the books that I have in my kids' shelves where it has number one equals blue, number two equals yellow, number three is equals red. It's paint by the numbers. Shit. It's just not that good. There was just nothing I could get out of this stuff. I'm sorry. That's just the way I see it. It just felt like a cliche being played on a guitar.
It's not good. It's not. It's just not. I'm sorry, Generation X. And what you and I can look forward to, though, is that in about 20 years' time, this stuff will be held up like it's the fucking Beatles. Because as we know, Generation X
will be
worse than the fucking boomers.
Well, if it
Head
is...
Carrier!
If it is...
Look, I did like some of the stuff on this album. I liked some of the tracks.
Really?
Yeah. Now, some of the tracks I liked and some of the tracks I thought were okay. I see what you did there. Yeah, it wasn't... I'm not as stridently against it as you, but it didn't... I'm not as stridently against... I can appreciate it as a museum piece. Yeah, I can appreciate it as a museum piece in music history. And they're like a lot. They're like a Tuatara. They're like a living fossil. It's like, wow, they're the same. Like a Tuatara is like, it's the same as it was 20 million years ago. It's exactly the same as it was when New Zealand was just a bunch of volcanic islands in the middle of the Pacific. And this band is, wow, these guys sound exactly like they did in 1988 when they were the missing link between 70s rock and grunge that came in 91. Are Tuatara's interesting animals? No, they're fucking dull. They do nothing. The only interesting thing about the Tuatara is that it got an interesting craft beer named after it. Basically, there's nothing interesting about the Pixies other than the fact that they led to more interesting music than this. Chugga Lugga is my favourite song on the album because it's basically thrash.
I listened to this album once only because you will laugh at me if I do what I normally do and start skipping tracks.
And it's important that you live your life by what other people think of you.
And I basically sat at my desk with my
head banging. Speaking of living fossils, David Carney just scored a goal for the Sydney Football Club.
Yes. Okay, we've gotten through the Pixies. Can we move on to the more exciting
stuff?
No,
let's keep talking about the Pixies.
No. You talk. I'll go away and do something else.
No, I got nothing.
So where did you come across Honeyblood?
Where did I come across Honeyblood? I was hanging out in Scotland. I was in the streets of Glasgow, and Discovery Weekly. It was earlier in the year. It was actually before they did the release radar. But it just turned up on my Discover Weekly, and I was like, it was a single at that stage. They just had a couple of singles. I thought, oh shit, it was Ready for the Magic, which is probably still my favourite track off the album.
Yeah, well,
it's two chicks playing the rock and roll. It's a more power pop. Power pop? It's a weird thing to say. Power pop. Power or pop sounds like a weird version of Guess Who that's themed after a certain basketball team.
What did their biography call it?
They only have two people.
Noise pop. Noise pop.
Yeah, okay. When I first heard this band, I thought, I kind of got a bit of a Veruca Salt sound.
Yep.
Particularly their last year's album that was a little bit more poppy and a little more polished. Having said that, during the week I went back and listened to that Veruca Salt album, and I would say, one, that's a really fucking good album, and I'm not sure I put it in my top five last year. I should have. I think I thought the Slater Kinney album was better, which it probably is, but I think I slightly underestimated how good that Veruca Salt album is because it wasn't Eight Arms to Hold You. And two, it's not that close a correlation between that album and this album. It's a different sort of sound. But this is a... It's catchy as shit. It's good fun. And I love the Scottish accent in it. I love that. I love a band that sings in their... that, you know, they sing in their home voice. I love the fact you can actually hear a fucking accent in it.
So the first time I listened to this album, two things struck me. One was the kick drum. Like, straight away I know, oh man, look, this is an awesome kick drum. And actually, the whole drumming is just... whoever their engineer is...
incredibly specific.
Oh, it is. But, like, it jumped out at me. Their drumming sound in this is... just so crisp and so big. Listening to it on headphones is a joy. But like the production overall, from her voice to like all the instrumentation, everything, the production is just bang on, I reckon. It's really, really good. Like it's just a joy to listen to. It's been really well put together. This album, to me... If you listen to this and you just think, okay, it's poppy, it's a bit, you know, it's a bit rock poppy, it's okay. Go back and listen to it three or four times. This album really grew on me the more I listened to it. In fact, like by the third or fourth time I listened to it, I was just completely head over the heels in love with this sound. Just fucking love this album. The hardest thing I had all week was deciding which track I was going to drop into our singles playlist. The other interesting thing
I'm ready for the magic. So if that's your
choice,
what's your two? I see then. What's your second choice?
No, no, no. My.
Because this is a good way of, well, basically you can figure out a way of getting two of your favourite songs in there.
Well, I think Walking at Midnight and Sea Hearts are my two favourite.
Sea Hearts is a really good song. That was also one of the songs that popped up in just because that they released that as a, well, in the Spotify terms, they released that as a single as well. Yep. Sea Hearts is a good song too. They've got a really good, I know a pop sensibility is probably a grandiose way of putting it, but they really know how to write fucking, there's a lot to be said for writing a really good fucking catchy pop hook. It's not a lost art, but it's an art, it's an underrated art, I think, if you can
absolutely.
Do it.
Absolutely, yeah.
In a non-Max Martin, hugely processed, paint-by-numbers, synthetic sense, if you can organically develop something that's catchy but still has, like, artistic merit, then that's really fucking cool.
The other thing I really liked, and it's, they do it a lot more on the first half of the album than the second half of the album, but they could write a straight sort of pop song, you know, verse, chorus, but they throw these little weird sort of codas or...
Like
they change it up.
They do that.
The one I really noticed was
interesting
on...
Interesting outros and bridges and, they absolutely do that.
At Sea Hearts, where they step it up at the end and they go into a... Like it's almost like a cheer squad sort of thing at the end, and it's like that just makes it so much more interesting. And I think the more you listen to it, it's like, well, I'm not getting bored with these pop songs because they change it up. That a little bit towards the end of the album they start to get away from that, but this is a cracking album. These are the sort of albums that make me glad that I give up a Friday or a Saturday night, because just listening to new music like this is why you listen to music, to sort of have your mind blown a little bit. Now, a little interesting subplot of this is we have an old, or Vanessa's got an old school friend who is in a band called Valhalla Lights, and they have a sound very similar to this, and they have an album coming out, I think, before the end of the year, which I'll throw in for one of our picks. And they have a sound very similar.
Maybe you should twin it with Staffo's band.
Yeah, maybe do it.
Have
an all local one. But I just had a look. The album's not out yet. I'll get Vanessa to ask tomorrow. It's just the single. But
it's surely not going to be on Spotify, though, is it?
Yeah, no, the single's on Spotify.
Oh, cool.
So
Valhalla Nights.
That's
a great name for a band, too.
It is, isn't it? And they're very...
Like Viking, rooting and drinking.
The other thing I was surprised with, too, is a two-piece. These guys sound way bigger than a two-piece.
We've had, there's quite a bit of two-piece action. A two-piece and a lot of production will get you a long way.
Yeah. Obviously, they probably either have session guys or play more than what they do, but...
I'll overdub in studio, but...
Yep. Ah, man, the drumming. Oh, like... And big props to the producer, because the drums are not low and muddy in the mix. Like there's, I can't remember what the song is, but there's one where they do a little, little tom fill, and you can hear every individual strike of the drumstick. It's just fucking awesome. I really enjoyed listening to this album this week. Just an absolute joy.
And this was their difficult second album.
Yeah,
so
with a completely new drummer. I don't know if you read that, but they did the first album and the drummer left, and this is a brand new drummer. So
okay, I think it's still the two same Scottish girls, though.
Yeah, so we've gone from ultra negative to ultra positive. What did you think?
Well, I wasn't ultra negative about the pictures. I was more kind of, yeah, good on you, Dad. Whatever.
Whatever.
Good on you, 44-year-old man. Good on you, fucking Francis Leach. enjoy your terrible washed-up shit that was on before Triple J was around.
I'm going to grit my teeth and ask what you thought of So Tonight That I Might See.
So I had a pretty bleak week. I had a bit
no.
of I had a It was funny. We were talking about this last week. I said, I don't really like listening to sad songs when I'm down. And I had a bleak old fucking week. It was kind of thinking, and I was actually put off listening to the album more, and I was like, oh, I don't think I can face this right now. I'm enjoying this Bunny Blood, but I don't think I can get into this right now. But it wasn't anywhere near as bleak as I was expecting it to be. I think you oversold the bleakness. I mean, there's some tracks in there that are just... Like the Wasted, which is really just grungy, gritty blues. One note I wrote was, I need more drugs to enjoy this.
Yeah.
Because it feels like something that if you were fucking wasted, it would be an amazing album.
But I'd
never found myself in the space to enjoy it other than at a fairly superficial level.
Well, to be honest, I was probably pretty wasted when I first heard this album.
1996, yeah, I reckon you were off your... I reckon, because that was the thing, I was thinking about it, like, if you're not you now, you are Bezo off his fucking chops on the grass in bloody western suburbs of Brisbane.
All gone
staring up at the sky after about 9 cones and listening to this, and like, yeah, I could see how this would work.
I think melancholy is probably a better description, and most of that comes from her voice too. She's got a very, I don't know what you would call it, mournful voice. It's definitely a different voice. It's not your sort of straight down the line.
It's a voice built for lullabies, really.
Yeah, probably.
When I did actually listen to it, the album almost set me to sleep.
It was just so. Yeah, it's definitely got that characteristic to it, and I'll put it on when I'm just like I want to drift off. So
I did see on Twitter this week that Real Scientists, the science rotation curation account that has a new scientist on every week, had like a music psychologist or something on, and at one point she was off on one about the psychology of sad songs, which was really interesting because of the discussion we'd had last week about, you know, what sort of person, you know, is it normal to like listen to sad songs when you're sad, or do people more likely to listen to sad to happy songs when they're sad to try and drag themselves out the bleak? And they were digging into why it is that some people find sad songs. Because that was basically like, why do people like listening to sad songs when they're sad? And that kind of dug into the psychology of it. So that's really interesting. I don't know whether they've storified it or anything, but if I can find it, I'll stick it in the show notes. Because it was definitely relevant to our interests in terms of the discussions we've had on here. But
it's
intriguing.
I don't know whether this is the greatest album ever made.
Like, well, it can't be. This is how many classics have we done?
Yeah, yeah.
This is After Dark episode 70.
But it has. It definitely has a specific feel, and it's an album that I only listen to when I'm in a particular type of mood. And I have to say, at the end of the week that I picked this, I was in that type of mood, and I enjoyed listening to it this week. So,
you know, I think I'd listen to that Honey Blood album if I was feeling down. Because at the end of it, I'd be like, yeah, woo!
Oh, yeah, I can totally...
Chucking, throwing fucking shapes. Yeah. Actually, no, I listened to that Ghost Notes by Verica Salt. Even though it doesn't sound that much like the Honey Blood album, I really, really enjoyed the sounds and the shapes and the stuff, the harmonies that album throws at you. So as our classic for next week, I'm picking 8 Arms to Hold You by Verica Salt.
Oh, nice.
Because it's been a while. I've been thinking about getting to that eventually, and this is a good reason to get to it. That's their, I'd say, their best and most consistent album. It was the one that got produced by Bob Rock of producing Metallica fame. So the guitars are fucking enormous, but it still has the melody and harmony elements that you'd expect from Verruca Salt. So that was their kind of high point before it all went wrong and they split up and they never talked to each other again until many years later. They bonded again over, this is Nina Gordon and Louise Post, bonded again over being mummies and listening to music.
So what was it, nine years between album releases, I think?
Well, Louise Post had the Veruca Salt band name, so she released, she had a bunch of different band lineups that were all pretty terrible and released a bunch of albums that were all pretty terrible. Because Nina was the singer. It's her vocal that kind of dominates Veruca Salt songs. I think Louise is a better guitarist.
So, for new tunes...
It's not local week though, so it's not.
Not yet. Look, I'm gonna go with two randoms that I popped up in my Discover Weekly that I haven't listened to that much.
Oh, this never goes badly.
Never goes bad. Well, it either goes really well or it goes really badly. So let's go with.
No, it never goes really well. It only ever goes really badly.
Monolith of Phobos. By
Monolith of Phobos.
By the Claypool Lennon Delirium.
As in Les?
I don't know. That's what the band's called. The Claypool Lennon Delirium.
Is this a Les Claypool side project by any chance?
I don't know.
You know Les Claypool, the dude from Primus. Why known as Big Brown Beaver style. Let's Winona got herself a Big Band Breather and she stuck it up in the air.
It is.
That's interesting.
Oh, hang on. Okay, it is Sean Lennon and Les Claypool.
I can't imagine a more fucked up partnership than that.
That is a weird...
I was thinking Lennon? What are they, Exhumed John? It didn't occur to me for a minute that it would be Sean. Or Julian, for that matter. Sean Lennon and Les Claypool. Fuck me. That's amazing.
In 2015, as his band, The Ghost of a Sabretooth Tiger, occupied the opening slot for Primus Tour, Sean Lennon got to play with Primus virtuoso bassist Les Claypool. And on
Les
stage,
Claypool is an amazing fucking bassist. I've listened to him.
Primus, awesome.
Primus did a cover of NIB, which is a song by Nativity in Black, which is a song by Black Sabbath, which is all about the bass. It is entirely a bass-driven song, and it is amazing and immense. But this is me show noting. This is me saying, right, remember to put Winona in the show notes. Remember to put MIB in the show notes. But no, he's amazing. But Sean Lennon,
that's a weird.
Like, what was it? Azalea Banks and Jim Jefferies and RZA turning up at Russell Crowe's party sort of weirdness.
Mm-hmm. And then the second one is called High Visceral Part 1 by the Psychedelic Porn Crumpets.
Oh, I was hoping it was High Visibility by the Helicopters, but I think that's a little bit old.
Yeah, I can't remember why I threw this in the album list, but it's a 2016
because it
release.
Pornographic.
Yeah, it had porn in the title. So
Porn Crumpets or whatever it was.
Psychedelic Porn Crumpets.
Psychedelic Porn Crumpets. I had a psychedelic porn crumpet once, but you left me.
So yeah, let's go.
Is your Discover Weekly broken? I mean, where were you? These don't sound like they work.
Well, you know I like listening to the sex music, so maybe it came from there. I can't remember.
Well, it's not the Pixies.
No. Man, that was hard. That was hard graft listening to that whole album.
But did you go back and listen to their earlier stuff as well?
No, because I was too busy listening to Honeyblood, to be honest.
And watching Test Cricket.
Well, I watched Test Cricket and listened
to
Honeyblood.
Really exciting Maiden. I had a really exciting Maiden once.
I watched NBA and listened to Honeyblood. I watched Test Cricket and listened to Honeyblood. I watched a whole heap of stuff and listened to Honeyblood. Dear. So that was good.
It seems right, like you're a little bit obsessed.
Just before we go, Honeyblood, would that be landing in your top five yet off the top of your head, you reckon?
I would have to go back and I think my top five has about 7 albums in it at the moment. So I would say yes, but then I think if I went back and counted them, I'd find that I'd have 7 on. But yeah, it was real good. But as you said, there is a tapering at the end.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure whether that tapering at the end is going to
actually
hurt it against... I'd have to go back and really assess what those other five really other really good albums... I mean, going back to fucking, you know, Ten Commandos, which we reviewed this season, because it is this season's album of the year, even though it's a 15 album. The last time I went back and listened to that, I was, again, gobsmacked by how good it is every single fucking track right to the end.
There's another album. There was another album that tailed off a little bit towards the end of the... that started off just brilliantly. I can't remember which one it was, but I had the same feeling that it just didn't have that kick-ass track in the last three.
Songs. Yeah. They just kind of ran out of songs, yeah. And that happens. That absolutely happens.
I'll be really interested to see what Honeyblood do next time.
I didn't do this, but maybe you'd be interested in going back and checking the album before this.
Yeah,
their debut.
Yeah, I have that down to do this week. But yeah, if they can pull something like Ready for the Magic or Sea Hearts or Walking at Midnight out all through the album, like all they needed was one more sort of.
One more proper banger.
Ready for the Magic, you know, so at sort of like 10, 11, and man, that would have been a kick-ass album. But hey, there's a lot of good music being played, so.
And the internet is finding it for us. Thank you, internet.
The only thing I'll say before we go is I do not know whether this year I'm going to have a hip-hop or a dance album in my top five, and I find that really disappointing.
Nah, you'll have the RZA and Dickhead from Interpol, won't you?
The Trump thing really taints that album.
That's right, that'll be over next week. It'll be over by Thursday.
But when he's launching nuclear weapons in 2 weeks, that'll really taint it for
him. Oh, no, he'll be launching his fucking new news channel for deplorables next week.
Maybe Bill Simmons will go there.
Well, actually, I think Simmons, to his credit, I think Simmons' politics are much fairly more Obama-y. Yeah. Well, not in the American sense.
Yeah.
You know, we would say far right in the Australian and New Zealand sense, but that turns out to be centre-left in the American sense. It'll be glad to get Twitter back, because Twitter's been broken. This year has been awful on social media because of the American fucking pissant election and the god awful British Brexit and all the rest of it. Basically, fuck your internal politics. I just want my social media back.
True. All right, Doc.
And speaking of people who can go and fuck themselves, Bono.
Bono.
Bono is apparently glamour of the year. I don't think he's a glamour. I don't think he's attractive at all. I don't want to see his tits. Fuck him.
I'm sure with all the internet going on, you could probably find some other tits to look at if you really want to.
Well, the thing is, he did get him out this week.
Did he?
He's been photographed in wet board shorts with his hand down the front of him. So I guess that's a glamour shot.
Well, are we going to finish this with Bono with his tits?
We are going to finish this with Bono with his hand down his strides, rearranging the boys, rearranging Adam Clayton and Larry Mullen Jr. Was that a bit too much on the edge? Oh, we should probably move on.
Yeah, we'll leave that there. Night, Doc.
Love is a disease. Love is a
No, it's not. Love. Syphilis is a disease which you can get through love.